Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be, well, traveling a little bit back in time into a period of what I call the golden years of Hollywood. Now, I know Hollywood is still in style today, but there's a flavor and there's an experience about those golden years that have a special magic that no one, I think, has been able to equal since. My guest today, Jean Kelch, is a woman that actually had the opportunity to interact with a lot of stars in her journey as an individual. Getting into that golden space of Hollywood is one that I think you're going to enjoy. Stumbling to the Stars is her story. And Jean, I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Jean, I have your book in front of me, and being held in your hand is a caricature of Judy Garland. You also have Gypsy Rose Lee, Marilyn Monroe, Bing Crosby. You have had the exposure to so many movie stars, and there are people in the world that whenever they hear the term Hollywood, they go, wow, and their imaginations just soar. You were born and raised in a small town of Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania, in a mining town. Yes, we had many tragic events there, and it was always my hope to learn more about life and people, be more adventurous, see more of the world, and perhaps make something of myself. I didn't know where I wanted to go with that, but I just knew I wanted to go to this large city.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the opportunity, I'll just say briefly, that I answered an ad with Barbizon Modeling School for a three-week course, which cost only $5. Would you believe it? Now, we're going
back to 1947. Yeah, but $5 then was a lot of money, Jean.
Well, for 3 weeks to start, I thought it's some way to get to New York City and where my parents would consent. Also, they had my hotel, where I stayed in the hotel, it was only $5 a week also. And then I only had $60 in my pocket, and that was it. So I had to work at some jobs, which were, well, in a restaurant, Macy's, kind of thing like that. In the meantime, I was modeling, in showroom modeling. I'm not a very tall person, so I was doing more of the shows.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was at a convention modeling, I noticed this caricaturist working in a booth, and I was fascinated by his drawings. One thing led to another. I went to his office. I met him. And then I was offered a position with him to assist him at his conventions where he was booked himself and cocktail parties, meetings. Also, I assisted him in writing an entertainment column, covering restaurants, interviewing people. So this was just a wonderful experience for me to learn all that.
I bet. Let's go back into your family background a little bit, because mm-hmm. I found reading about your mother absolutely interesting. She was born in Kaunas, Lithuania.
In Lithuania, yes.
And she was actually from a royal family. So tell us a little bit about her and her history.
Yes, well, I found, her father was a baron, and they had, it's not just royalty, it's nobility, that's it. The royalty is the king, they're the kings and queens. I learned this later. And they had 34 servants in their family, beautiful home. They had white chariots with drawn by beautiful horses. So her mother would tell her all this because she came here when she was 2 years old to the United States. Now, at that time, the Tsar of Russia era, you know, they moved in mm-hmm. and they were taking over everything, all their possessions. So her mother tells her the story how they would just go up in the hills and read at night and light a fire And but my grandfather slowly brought everybody over here. There were 9 children, and of course my mother was one of them. But from my mother's, my grandmother went from, you know, these riches and all. Oh, and she married the tailor of the family. And I said to my mother, the tailor of the family, was he wasn't very wealthy then. She said, oh, no, he was also wealthy in his own right. But he wasn't wealthy enough for her to, I guess what they call it, lower in her station in life, to receive the dowry, something like that. But it was, she went from all this world, or this nobility, I guess you call it, down to a town in Scranton, Pennsylvania, where they didn't at the time even have a good hardwood floor in their kitchen. It was a dirt floor. Can you imagine the contrast mm-hmm. for her?
Oh, that would have been horrific. I mean, yes. You think this was in the early 1900s when she came over here.
Yes, 1902. Go from that
opulence. Coming to a country, I mean, she lost everything when the Soviet
exactly.
regime came in. Everything was taken away from them.
That's
so to go
exactly.
from that and then to come into America and live in a house in Pennsylvania where she has a dirt floor and no servants, I mean, she didn't, from what you said in your story, your grandmother didn't talk about this much, but you're right. That would have been a phenomenal adjustment for her.
I know. I guess it was. But so it was. It's interesting, but that background is very interesting for us.
Yes, it is. Now, you really had that sense of adventure in you as an individual. And when you think of the time frame where you were going into these environments and you were working as a model, the standards and what we would call the moral status of what good girls could do and couldn't do was quite different from today, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. At that time, I really didn't want to be a model. I had to put up with the photographers and their surprises. You know, at times you'd be getting undressed and all of a sudden they would open up the curtain, are you ready yet, and things like that. So fortunately, I had some good friends that knew photographers, so they would send them over and they'd say, no, don't do anything that you shouldn't do, you know, just treat her well. And that was good. But if you read my book, one of the experiences, I was tackled by this famous photographer on Fifth Avenue when I went for a sitting. It was an experience. Of course, I just chalked it up to experience. I guess this is what happens here. And when you're young, you can do that. The exciting part was that I learned how to the business of caricaturing and what this gentleman did, and then I left him because he was so possessive. He was much older than I was, and I just left him one day and decided to go on my own. I made up a little brochure, you know, my typewriter, and pasted the caricatures in, and sent them. After researching in the library the large companies and their addresses, I sent my brochure to all of these companies. In 2 weeks, my first offer was by Firestone Tire and Rubber to work at their convention. And I asked for $150 an hour after getting $35 a week. And
wow.
I asked for first-class airfare, first-class hotel accommodations. I got it all. At that time, the companies had a large budget for all of
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for Time Magazine at least 12 times a year, Pepsi-Cola, Avon, New York Life Insurance. And New York Life Insurance, I was lucky to be working at the at Greenbrier in White Sulphur Springs, that beautiful resort.
Mm-hmm.
So that I worked one evening at a cocktail party for them, 2 hours on a Thursday, and then again 2 hours on the following Tuesday. And they said if I had no other bookings in between, I could stay the whole week. And can you imagine doing that and having an 8-course breakfast plus everything else? It was just wonderful. So I was fortunate. I was also given many presents after because I did so well for them. One was a beautiful pin from Cartier, and then, you know, and extra money and all that. And I was always nervous before these shows, but once I started drawing, and then seeing this big line of people, you know, just lined up waiting for me to draw, it just gave me so much more confidence, and I felt great after that. I did so well for the companies.
Well, that is terrific. Something that I want to share with the audience in your book, Stumbling to the Stars, you wrote a poem about freedom.
Oh, yeah.
And This is in 1944, and I'd like to share it with the audience because I think it's beautifully done.
Oh, thank you.
Now, remember, her family had experienced firsthand oppression of the darkest type, and you never forget that. That is something that you pass along, and that's part of what makes this country of ours so very special, because we've had so many people whose ancestors, my father came from Italy, all kinds of stories that people have gone through. But I want to share this poem with you. It's called Freedom. She wrote it when she was 15. As I walk alone through the snow tonight, I wonder if everything is all right, if my home, as I picture it to be, will still be there in this mysterious night, so that I may escape from emotional fright. I shudder with fear when I imagine the trees are ghosts and the stars are the eyes seeing my innermost. But now, a different feeling creeps over me. Again, I think of the trees with ease and the stars, the light, the snow, and how they glow. To think that I'm free to wander here in this silence from fear is a thought that suddenly brings a tear. Because I thought of another place and then more where they have fear and bombing galore. Their loved ones, whom they were with yesterday, were left behind to be taken away. To heaven they'll go from this war-stricken world to the peace they fought and prayed to be restored. Ah, how fortunate I am to be approaching this house where the light shines brightly all about, and voices with kindness, laughter, and friendliness are the voices that will greet me to join them in happiness. I really think your poem is so meaningful, especially with your family background.
Thank you. I worked in town, and I did that. I created that poem when I was walking home at night.
Now, and what was the adventure in Cuba that you had?
Now, a friend of mine in New York knew this gentleman that owned several hotels in Florida, in Panama, in Cuba. And they had this great idea to have me work for this gentleman at his hotel in Cuba for a few weeks. It was actually 3 weeks. And I did work for him, of course. Before that, we had this meeting, and I said, no, hanky-panky, you know, because this man was much older. Of course, at that time, I was about 18, and to me, everybody was older. Like, they're all in their 60s. He probably was only in his 50s.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just such a wonderful experience. It was 60 miles outside of Havana called Varadero Beach, and it was a Varadero Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
As a guest would enter the hotel, I would draw their caricature, and there wasn't that much to do, so I helped the management a great deal in changing the rooms for them, and you know, whether it's they wanted the room on the ocean side and not the bay side, and I just helped them so much that they wanted me to stay longer. And there are several episodes down there which we don't have time to go into, but I was actually shot at, I mean with a gun, only because this man had too much to drink one night, and he thought that he was hosting this party and that I shouldn't leave when I left, and I'm running for the taxi, and it was on the newspaper next morning in the front page. So this gentleman that owned the hotel, he would fly out and fly in from different places in his hotels, I guess, and he always asked me to come up and have a meeting with him. And that, when I say up, that means in his penthouse suite in the hotel. So when I went up, it's so funny because he would be always receive me laying on the bed in his boxer shorts. I'd say to him now, Mr. L, I won't say his last name. I said, you know you're not supposed to receive me that way. And I would take the newspapers and cover him up.
Newspapers and cover him. Oh my gracious!
Yeah, he had just laughed and he accepted it well. It was really interesting. And then if you want me to talk about any of the movie stars, I was next to Elizabeth Taylor when Mike Todd gave her this wonderful birthday bash at Madison Square Garden.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She looked beautiful, and because I was with the Press in New York at the time, I was a member of the Press in New York, and I was able to go backstage in all of these different parties. So I got right next to her so I could see how beautiful she was. And there is also Jimmy Durante. I was invited at the Copacabana by him. First of all, he made an inappropriate remark to me. And I said, oh, Mr. Durante, you know, I was talking about, I said, I'm engaged. Of course I wasn't. I had this boyfriend. He said, why don't you come and be my guest at the Copacabana? I suppose that made up for it, which he did. I danced with Walter Pidgeon. I hope your audience remembers all these people, movie stars. I was at a dinner party, and there were only 10 of us. I sat next to him. He asked me to dance, and of course I was delighted, but a little nervous. And I said to him, oh, my mother really likes you in the movies, thinking he's older, I should say that. He said, well, I hope one day, my dear, that your mother's daughter will like me as well. Of course, I really regretted saying that after I did, but, you know, these things happen. And then on Milton Berle's show, I was on a few TV shows. We were supposed to draw each other. Of course, he put his thumb out, like the old-fashioned thing, you know, where you focus in. He drew his thumb, and I drew him, but that's the way it goes. He never did anything that he was supposed to do, just to get a laugh.
Now, with all of these stars that you have been with, Gene, you had Milton Berle. I mean, you've just done so many people. And, again, this is during a time frame when the nightclubs were really hot. Again, I think it was, you know, it's the golden era of Hollywood.
Yes, the fabulous 50s, they called it.
Oh, that's okay. You've put in the right term. And there you had glamour. You had all of these activities that were going on. You talk about Xavier Cugat, and he was a very well-known musician. You have so many different people in here. For those of you who are younger, you're saying, oh my goodness, I don't know about any of these names. It really is fun when you can hear the stories of someone like Gene Kelsch, who actually was one-on-one with a lot of these people. You think of Liberace, you think Debbie Reynolds was, you know, very, very big. She was upcoming then. You had Gene Kelly, Fred Astaire. Mm-hmm. You had all of these wonderful, wonderful personalities, and of course, Hollywood made them bigger than life. I mean, they were really public gods. You'd look at them and just go, oh, wow, these people.
So glamorous. Exactly.
Yes. And the women, it was an era that emphasized an elegance and a beauty. And I'm not saying that they all were gorgeous, the women, or that all the guys were handsome, because you had the Burt Lancasters and you had the Kirk Douglas and you had so many of these other people, and they all were very, very much individualized in certain classifications and the way that they were portrayed. But for you to be able to have interacted with so many of them because of doing caricatures, how many caricatures had you done? Did you keep a count? Do you have copies of everything that you did?
Well, when I worked at the conventions, I worked at conventions all around the country. I did thousands. But the movie stars, I think in my book, I have a whole list of them in the back. I believe several hundred, several hundred anyway. And at that time, it was just a whirlwind to me. I was just doing something all the time, going someplace all the time, meeting these people. It was just one of these things I accepted, and I didn't know that many people would be interested in hearing even these stories until later in my life when I said, oh, yes, I met Frank Sinatra, and I have Marilyn. You did, they'd say, then tell me the story. So that's why many of my friends would say, Gene, you've got to write a book, and of course I wrote it for my children too. But to me it was fascinating, like Humphrey Bogart, when the New York Press, we were invited down to Hollywood, to the different film studios. After going to the publicity department and getting our badge, we were free to walk around and watch everybody making movies. And that was fascinating because I met Humphrey Bogart there. I accidentally knocked Marlon Brando's nose a bit. He had to have adjusted. He was playing Julius Caesar. I saw when they were filming The Robe, where Gene Simmons played. Mm-hmm. And it was just wonderful. I mean, my whole life there, that whole 10 years, was from the time I was just 18 or 19 up till I was about 30 when I got married. It was just fascinating.
Now I want my listeners to know also that you won a few beauty contests. You were made Miss U.S. Marines, and there are some gorgeous photographs of you, and of course, the bathing suit era, and I have to chuckle because I can remember seeing pictures of bathing suits like this, and that was really hot stuff. That was a big business. But you have a picture with the U.S. Marine. You also have the American Legion Poppy Queen, and that just absolutely cracked me up. You are gorgeous, though.
Oh, thank you.
You were Miss NBC, and you were also Miss Brooklyn Dodgers.
Uh-huh.
And there you've got a real long Brooklyn Dodgers shirt on with a baseball bat and cap, and also Miss Silk Stockings. I mean, you were really a glamorous lady.
Oh, thank you. That's related to the Silk Stocking movie at the time. They were promoting it. And that particular photograph appeared in London. I was very pleased that they liked that. Now, on Miss NBC, I was fortunate to be on Today's Show. At that time, it was Dave Garraway that was the host on the show. And I was on that show three times that morning. Today, it would be different. But that time, they said the third time was on the West Coast. So that was exciting for me to be on the TV shows. I was on a TV show with Rosemary Clooney. And believe it or not, she tap danced instead of sang. I thought that was interesting that she would tap dance instead of sing.
Well, Rosemary Clooney will never be forgotten because of her role in White Christmas. I mean, she will be forever young in the minds of any viewer that has ever seen that Christmas classic. And she had such a phenomenally melodic voice. It was wonderful. Patti Page was also someone, and Patti's still singing. Patti's still performing.
She was one of the sweetest ladies, always remembered me when I saw her. And when she went to New York, now she was taking acting lessons and singing just to be able to afford the acting lessons, never planning to be a singer. And here she became a famous singer. So all these little things, actually the office we had was on Broadway in the Schubert Building, and many people would come in there always because of writing the entertainment column. They wanted to be written up. And next door to us was the Gag Writers Institute office, so we had people like Jimmy Belushi coming in all the time, and because he'd go into there, that office to talk to the writers. So it was always somebody walking in our office, whether it was Johnny Mathis or someone else. And then many times backstage, I was able to sit down and talk to people like Ray Bolger, Dan Daly. When I was watching the set where Dan Daly was on, let's see the name of. That was, I'm trying to remember, Dan Daly. There's No Business Like Show Business at 20th Century Fox. We were waiting for Marilyn Monroe to come on the set, and she was an hour late. But she was a bit of, I would say, not always so confident, and she wanted to do everything perfect and look perfect. So that's why it's taken her so long.
And now, you also, excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, not at all. I could go on and on. There's so many people that I love to talk about.
Now, the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, what was your experience with them, and how did you meet them?
I was in the Colony restaurant, and, of course, we covered restaurants, critiqued them or reviewed restaurants for the entertainment column. And while I was in the Colony restaurant, which is in New York City, they were sitting at another table, and the maitre d' asked myself and my escort if I'd like to meet with them, and they went over, and I said we would. So they invited us to their table. So we had dessert with them. And they're very, very quiet. He's very quiet. They're actually small in stature, you know. And he had a lot of jewelry on. I know she loved jewelry. And at that time, they left, and they said they were staying at the Waldorf Astoria. But that was nice to be able to sit and talk with him for a while.
Well, you've met famous people from around the world, and there's stories about you being stranded, you were in a blizzard, and various things. You got into the newspaper. So you have all of these different stories, but when you look back and you think of that era, the golden years of Hollywood, and you're sharing these stories, you've got these caricatures, and I'm sure the ones that you've saved, I mean, they would probably do well to be in a museum because you're portraying a time frame. Most of these people have passed away. Gene Kelly, Jimmy Dorsey, Tommy Dorsey, Elsie Lerman, Rudy Vallee, Tyrone Power, Red Buttons, Red Skelton, Emmett Kelly, The Clown, Edie Gourmet, Sid Charisse. She passed away just a couple of years ago. Patty's still with us. But so many of these wonderful, wonderful people that you had interaction with, that you drew the faces of, plus the many thousands that you do faces of in these conventions. And I observed in one photograph that you've got in your book of a convention, I thought, how times have changed, because it was nothing but a line of men. Those trade shows and conventions weren't attended by women. They were only attended by men, and it was no wonder that you were so popular doing all the pictures, but they look so somber. It's just is so cute. You look at them, and it's like the man in the gray suit or whatever it was that Gregory Peck played in. The gray flannel suit, the man in the gray flannel suit, that stern, serious face. But that was the time. That's what it was like then.
I wasn't in the man's world. It was all men. Yeah,
very much so. And that's what, you know, some of the photographs portray. And I think here we are today where we have evolved to this point. What would you say to a young woman who would just, or even a young man, a young woman or a young man, that would want to be able to enter into that kind of a world? Movie stars are still there. They're portrayed a little differently than in the past, but not really. We just have different costumes on them and different agendas that we work with. What would you say to someone, a young person, that might want to, let's say, do characters for the stars, caricatures, or do something that is unique and different and would love to be in that show scene? What would you say to them?
Well, what I did, I was fortunate. I just took advantage of opportunities. When I met someone, I would talk to them. I would be very interested always in learning. And I just took advantage of every opportunity and tried to learn as much as I could. Now, I did all this. I became a caricaturist without a formal education. I had no college education, and I just want to let people know, and I love to inspire people to say, take advantage of any opportunity, learn something, more of a skill. Even Sophie Loren said that she prefers to be recognized for her intelligence and something artistically valid, rather than, you know, people focusing just on her appearance. I really didn't want to be a model. I just want to do something more. So I would, every time I talked to people, I'd ask them about their business. And I was always interested in learning. And that's how I got into caricature. And I worked with this man as his assistant. I kept watching him. And I just went on my own very boldly. Everybody I knew, even my parents, said, oh, don't do it. Don't take the risk. But I did. And if you want to do something so badly, I just think you have to put everything into it. I worked so diligently and so hard for these people, these companies, that I wanted to not just to prove myself, to do a good job for them. And that's what you have to do. I think you have to put everything into it. Practice makes perfect, as they always say. And that's how I got ahead. And at that time, I was the only woman celebrated caricaturist in the nation. And that's why I'm in Who's Who of American Women and all that. That's why I got such a good, let's say, recognition out of this. Because I worked very diligently. I worked very hard for them. And that's with the companies. So I would just say, just persevere. Don't give up. Just keep trying. Learn as much as you can. Don't be afraid to ask questions. And if someone ever says to you, well, you know, you meet someone that you really admire, and they'll say to you, well, call me if you need anything. Just say, oh, I'll remember that. I certainly would be glad to. And don't forget to call them. You know, people love to help people.
You know, I have to address your last statement. That has happened so many times where I have told people, call me, and I never hear from them. And I was very sincere when I said it. Now, there are many people that would say, oh, this person is so famous, what are they going to, they're not going to want to talk to me. Perhaps that's the case. But just what you said, Jean, is very important. Pick up the phone and call. They are a human being just like you are. And that does make a difference.
Yes.
Now, you have your website, and it's Jean Kelch. Let me spell her first and last name for those of you listening. If you'd like to find out more about this fascinating lady, JeanKelsch, and it's pronounced Jean Kelch, but again, it's spelled JeanKelsch.com. Fascinating lady, wonderful stories. Jean, your photographs in your book, the picture of you is just lovely. Your caricatures are lovely. I think you have walked a fortunate path, but I know you earned every step of the way.
Yes,
and I'm so delighted you've been my guest.
Oh, well, thank you. It was my pleasure.
It has been delightful having you again. Jean Kelch, check her out. I think you'll find it fascinating reading and informative and very visual. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Telephone lines are now open. The number to call into is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, you are welcome. After I give you my impressions, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. So again, 888-815-9756. That's the worldwide toll-free number. Now, one thing that I want to let you know about, day after tomorrow, Saturday, I will be doing a 2-hour program on Achieve Radio with Bill on Super Psychics, and the telephone lines will be open for those entire 2 hours, and I will be chatting with him, so you're going to be able to call in, and you can go to AchieveRadio.com, and that's 4 to 6 Pacific time. Also, I wanted to remind you that if you have a story about the paranormal, I would love for you to be able to send me that story because I'm putting together a book. I'm collecting 100 stories of experiences that people have had. I'm going to be putting some experiences of my own in the book, but I'd love to hear from you. Why? Because I think the more that we can share about experiences, the better it is for all people concerned, because when we can take fear out of what we call the paranormal, look at it with an eye of investigation and exploration, you're going to find that it is something that causes you to be curious and, again, not fearful. So your story could make a difference in somebody's life. Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking about altitudes. The Alphabet of Gratitude. Michelle Waldner is going to be my guest. And I'm a strong believer in having an attitude of gratitude because I really think it makes a difference. And, of course, my newsletter is going to be coming out as well. So we are going to have all kinds of information regarding events and situations that are going to be coming up, and that will be in there as well. Sharon Heil had a poem that I really like. There's a gorgeous photograph in front of me that's just all about violets. And for those of you that are lovers of flowers, as I am, I think that you'll appreciate this little poem. It's called A Ground Cover of Violets, a Quilt of Petals Blanketing the Earth in the Sweet Nectar of Spring. Oh, it's just such a joy. Don't you feel good when you're out and about and you see all of these beautiful, beautiful plants, and some of them are so fragrant. There is a plant not too far from us. We went out walking with our Scotties the other morning, and oh, the perfume that filled the air was amazing. And so we were trying to figure out where it was coming from, and we spotted this huge bush, and it looks like Lily of the Valley. And the fragrance was just marvelous. And then lavender is blooming here in the Pacific Northwest, and, of course, fragrant lavender. There's nothing like it in the colors, just all kinds of purples and pinks and just beautiful, beautiful flowers and aromas. They just make your day. It just absolutely invigorates you. So take some time. Go out. Walk. Get out and about. Enjoy the beauty of spring. It is just absolutely wondrous for your mind, for your soul, for your spirit. And if you've had to be closeted in with the cold for a long period of time, there's nothing like it. I wanted to share a true story with you about Lee Iacocca. And this is a man who was just absolutely amazing in the way that he was able to take over a company that basically was bankrupt and turned it around. And I'm not going to go into a lot of details about it, but this is a man that said, you can, if you have the right team, you can make all the differences in the world. You can create what needs to be created, but it takes a willingness to stand up, be accountable, and do the work necessary to get the job done. Well, he writes in his autobiography about many of the experiences he went through, and one of them was about a mistake. And I think this is something that's so important. We forget that a lot of people that have achieved what we call success have gone through a lot of nightmares. They have lost things. They have gone bankrupt, perhaps. Maybe they have made horrible mistakes that just taught them intense lessons that they would never, ever forget. And we all are going to have experiences like that. Well, Lee Iacocca, in 1956, he said Ford, the company he was working for, emphasized auto safety rather than performance and horsepower. And they had introduced something that we take for granted today, and that is crash padding for dashboards. And they were sending out promotional films to explain how much safer these new dashboards were. Now, they had a narrator, of course, that was talking about what they wanted to inform those that were watching the film about. And on that, in that film, there was a claim made that the padding on your dashboard was so thick that a person could drop an egg on it from a two-story building and it would bounce right off without breaking. Now get that visual in your head. Dropping an egg from two stories above and it would bounce off of that dashboard without breaking. Well, Lee Iacocca thought, I'm going to demonstrate this. He had 1,100 salespeople come together for a meeting. He climbed a ladder. He didn't go up two stories. He climbed a ladder and proceeded to drop an egg on a strip of the dash padding he had placed on the floor of the stage that he was on. Guess what? The egg missed the padding. Splattered on the floor. The second egg that he dropped bounced off of his assistant's shoulder. Now, this was not a man that was going to give up easily. He threw down egg number 3 and number 4. This time they landed on the target, but they broke. Finally, when he dropped the fifth egg, landed on the dashboard padding, and rolled off. Lee Iacocca said he had learned two lessons that day. First, you never use eggs at a sales rally. And he said, second, you never go before your customers without rehearsing what you want to say, as well as what you're going to do to help sell your product. We all are salespeople. We really are. How we present ourselves, how we do what we do, we're doing it 24 hours a day on one level or another. That is just a fact. But Lee Iacocca made some very good points here, and there were lessons that he learned. And that is, you really have to know that you are going to be able to do what you say you can do. Now, eventually, with the egg experiment, he was able to drop an egg that didn't ooze all over the place. It did what it was supposed to do. But he had to learn how to do it. And it brought back a memory. There was a restaurant here in our local area. And one of the things that they would do, they would bring a ladder to the table. And because they served barbecue and cornbread, one of the tricks and one of the come-ons for people to be in the restaurant, it was just absolutely delightful. People just loved it. They would climb up on the ladder, and they had a pot of honey, and they had one of those wooden spiral type of honey turners, and they would scoop up a huge batch of honey, and they would hold it above your plate, and the honey would drop right down onto your cornbread. They also would put honey in a pot. Now, we had a brother-in-law that we took to dinner at this barbecue restaurant, and the waitress said, because the brother-in-law was bald, that she could do this on top of his head. And Lewis was a good sport. He said, go right ahead. I've got an easy wash head. It's not a problem. And do you know what? This waitress did that. She put the dish on top of Lewis's head, and the honey went right into the dish. And we were joking. All of us were just in stitches. And we said, how many times did you practice? She said, I can't tell you how much honey got wasted, because I had to learn how to balance the wooden spiral to grab up the honey and to drop it. She said it took a lot of practice, and she said there have been times I've missed, but you don't do it too often. And the reason I share that story with you is because it does take practice in life to really be good. Think of those people that go out and become champions, whether they're skaters, whether they are ping pong players. It doesn't make any difference. Piano player. It makes no difference. It takes practice. It takes doing something over and over and over and over again until it becomes just a part of you. I think of our guest that we had today, Jean, and here she is doing caricatures. She had to do this over and over and over again, and literally has done thousands of these caricatures in the 10 years that she was dedicated to working in the show world. It was so easy and so natural, she could just zip it out. So all of these things that we want in our life. If you really have an interest in something and you want to become skilled with it, it takes practice. And if Lee Iacocca can be open in his autobiography, as well so many people are, about the mistakes that have been made, it is an example to us to show us that we all are human beings on this planet doing the best that we can. And when you really want to make a difference, then you will continue to do what you do and aim for that level of excellence that's going to set you apart. You will no longer be considered mediocre. You will no longer be considered an individual that is just, well, ho-hum. You'll be considered exceptional, whether you're a master baker or whether you are a NASA astronaut. Striving for excellence is always worth doing. Remember, who you are and what you are is going to be stated by you in how you present yourself, in what you demonstrate, and in your belief in what you have to offer life. So give yourself a pat on the back for every victory. And when you make a mistake, just go, okay, I made a mistake. Pick yourself up and move on to a new direction. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for a moment. When we come back, I've got more good things to share. And if I have the time, I'm going to share a recipe for garlic basil shrimp. Good stuff. We'll be back in just a moment.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. To Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. And if you've got a pad of paper and a pen, I will be giving out the recipe for the garlic basil shrimp shortly. But I also wanted to share some information with you that really is quite significant, and that has to do with the job market. People are, as they always have in history, are going wherever the jobs are. Today's world is quite interesting and very challenging for people of all ages who are looking for work. In the past 3 years, almost 9 million jobs have disappeared from the economy and underemployment. Have you heard that term? It was a relatively new one to me. Underemployment. And that's part-time contract and freelance work has doubled. And there is a record high of 6.4% of all the employed in the fourth quarter of 2009, according to a new study. Now, that's another 8.9 million people who are ready, willing, and able to work full-time jobs but have to settle for less than 35 hours a week. Now, Andrew Sum, who's an economist at Northeastern University and is the author of the study that found out about the numbers for the underemployed, he said since 2007, thousands of American companies have turned to transient workers to meet the demand, but have so far refused to add permanent jobs in significant numbers, leaving the unemployment rate hovering at 10%. Now, the hardest hit segments of the workforce are construction, manufacturing, middle management, and service, with the young and less educated suffering the most. We effectively are going through a depression in the job market, and one of the reasons is that so many jobs have gone offshore. And the American marketplace is being hit so hard with taxes and so many other things that businesses are scurrying to try to be able to make a profit. And some people are of a mindset that, gee, this is something that they don't really understand. And unless you've owned a business, it's pretty hard to be able to see things from a different perspective. So for those of you that are really interested in having a better understanding about business, check out any courses or classes that are going to be available to you so you can look at both sides of the fence. Employment is really something we all want. And no matter who you are, if you're in business for yourself, you are an employee of the customers that you serve. If you are an employer wanting to hire employees, you've got so many things that you have to be concerned about. You want to keep your overhead as reasonable as you can so you can stay in business. And that is where the entrepreneurial spirit needs to come alive. Americans have been known for being resourceful and being able to step up to the plate, and that is something that we need to do right now. We need to bring some manufacturing back into our country so that we have more to export, so that we're not importing any more than we absolutely have to. We're a great nation, and it's a nation of innovation and resourcefulness that I think has an opportunity at this time, which seems to be very dark for so many people, to make a difference. And for those of you that are skilled and are looking for employment, you may have to do what a lot of people are doing and going to those environments that enable you to work. One of the reasons I bring this up is that on my trip to Alaska, both on my flight up and back, I met young men who were going up to Alaska to get work. One young man, Eli, was going up to work at a fishery. He lives in Idaho, and his family is not going to have very much. He's in construction, and he said he had to go where the work was. He went to the unemployment office, and they talked about out-of-state jobs. So he's going to be separated from his family for 3 months while he is up there making excellent money working in the fishing industry. People may say, oh, that's terrible. That shouldn't have to be. You do what you have to do. If you've got a family to support, you go where you need to go, and you do what you have to do to be able to feed those that are waiting at home. And it takes a combined effort. A lot of families, it's both the men and the women that are working to support the needs of the family. And I've talked with a lot of young people that are very consciously aware of what they need to do. But also looking at how you can continue to educate yourself, interacting with people who are doers, keeping yourself out there, is something that is a do-it-yourself job. Nobody's going to be able to do it for you. Nobody can hold your hand. Nobody's going to be able to gift you anything. You are going to need to step up to opportunity. And I think Jean, my guest today, said it very well. Take advantage of every opportunity that comes your way. It might be in the form of volunteering to assist someone. You just don't know where your opportunity to find a job and to interact with people that may be able to steer you in the direction of something that would be exactly what you would want. It's there for you. Don't close your eyes and don't close your mind. You'll find that there is that fact. Okay, here we go. Garlic-based shrimp. This is really, really easy, and it is so fast. What you're going to need are 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 1/4 pounds of large shrimp. And you need to have them peeled and deveined. Of course, you can always get them so that they're already fixed that way. You're going to need 3 cloves of garlic. You want to mince them up finely. You need 1/8 teaspoon of crushed red pepper flakes. And if you like it spicier, have it spicier. You're going to need 3/4 cup of a dry white wine, whichever wine tastes best to you. That's what you should use. 1 1/2 cups of grape tomatoes cut in half. 1/4 cup of finely chopped fresh basil. A little bit of salt and pepper to taste, and then 3 cups of cooked orzo, and you can make that whole wheat, but you can put this on any kind of pasta that you want. So the choice is yours. Now, this is how simple it is. It's fast, easy, and flavorful. You need a heavy skillet. You want to heat the oil, 2 tablespoons of oil, over medium-high heat until it's hot, but you don't want the oil smoking. Of course, your shrimp is all prepared. You pop those into that hot oil, you cook them, turn them only once, but cook them just until they're cooked through. They'll turn a nice pink. Usually it takes about 2 minutes, and then with a slotted spoon, you want to transfer it to a bowl. Then you put in your garlic, your pepper flakes, and you cook them until it starts to smell, which is going to only take about 30 seconds. Add your wine and cook over high heat until it reduces, and that's going to take you about 3 minutes. Then take those halved grape tomatoes, stir them in, add your basil, and season it with salt and pepper to taste. Put your shrimp in. You'll just warm that up a little bit, stirring until they're heated through, and you serve it with your pasta or your orzo. It is perfect for 4 people, and it is light and easy and fast to prepare. Well, I know we're out of time. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Michelle Walder. Alphatude, the alphabet of gratitude. That is what the show tomorrow. It's going to be all about, it's a great way to end the week with gratitude. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna. We'll talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.